Hello, and welcome to Beverage Industry Sip and Learn podcasting series. I am your host, Jessica Jacobson, editor of Beverage Industry. Prognosticating the next trends in food and beverage is a valuable tool in which manufacturers are eager to participate in. Spoonshot built an intricate AI platform that uses different data sets to assist food and beverage manufacturers to pinpoint and predict vanguard culinary and flavor trends. Here with us today is Kishun Vasani, co-founder and CEO of Spoonshot, to give us some insights on the future of food. Thank you for joining us today, Kishun.
Thanks for having me, Jessica.
Well, I'd like to start out addressing a topic that has commanded much of the news cycle in 2020, which is the pandemic. Prior to the pandemic, you guys had developed a list of culinary and flavor trends, and then COVID-19 hit. How has the pandemic impacted some of the trends for American consumers?
Yeah, great question. We actually, as you rightly said, we had highlighted and predicted 8 major trends for food and beverage innovation back in Q4, October, literally a year ago, in 2019. And those trends were for things that we saw coming out in 2021. And we decided that, of course, given this awful event that's happened this year, you know, it would make sense for us to go back and have a look and see how that's sort of changed consumer behavior, changed what our data says, and see what's holding true and what's not. And actually, what was interesting is that we saw that 7 out of the 8 trends that we sort of highlighted last year, we believe are still very relevant, and we actually brought in another one. So to kind of call out a couple of examples and how they've kind of accelerated post-pandemic would be, first of all, one where we focused on the rise of the chickpea or garbanzo beans. Of course, that's been seeing a lot of growth because of plant-based protein. And one of the things that's happened really most recently is that we've seen a rise of these trends, not just in the data, but actually in reality now as well. So the predictions are starting to come true. So of course, I think you may be familiar with that brand called Banza, which has launched various chickpea-based products. And they most recently just came out with their chickpea-based pizza crust as well. And we had predicted that flat usage in flatbreads and crust would have made show up in the frozen food section. So I think, you know, it's good to see some of these trends coming to life that we predicted last year. On top of that, I think we'd expect there to be a continued interest in products and technologies that help sugar reduction, particularly allulose. That was mentioned in our sugar rush section. I think obviously with all the social isolation and issues of the healthcare related to pandemic, you know, we're going to see a greater focus as well on foods that are focusing on anxiety relief, obviously ingredients. You know, there's been a talk about CBD and its legalities and some of the issues around that, but we highlighted a particular CBD adjacent ingredient, Copaiba, and that has similar psychotropic properties, but no legal strings attached, and very able to use that one as well. So that's another interesting one. And then I think, there's been this extremities that have been happening with regards to trends as well. Like on one side of the extreme to the other, let's talk about beverage, for example, boozy drinks versus the sober curious. We've seen, of course, a rise of low and no ABV drinks in recent years. And so going from that decadence to abstinence and sort of now landing somewhere in the middle, we think, where consumers are starting to realize that these things, these extremes are causing more harm than good. And so sort of moderation is the new watchword. So I think that's an important one and something we covered in the section called Everything in Moderation. The one trend we thought that actually, out of the, as I said, 7 out of 8, we believe was still relevant. And the one that didn't quite make the cut when we looked again this year was what we called sexy, ugly flavor mashups. And what we mean by that is, of course, in the restaurant and food service space, there was a lot of experimentation going on with it, really interesting flavor mashups. But of course, people have gone back to what they know, what they trust. They're in these uncertain times, they're looking for that reliability, that comfort, that safety. And so we're not saying that they're not going to happen, but we also think that it's not going to accelerate at the same pace as it was pre-pandemic. And so, you know, at the same time, there's actually some interesting counterthoughts to that, in the sense that if you think about the restaurant experience in its entirety in food service, it's now more about the menu than it ever has been before, as you know, businesses have moved towards the delivery model and the dine-in experience that we're used to, where there's service and ambiance. Those things are no longer or much less of a factor. So there has to be menu innovation. It just may be tapping into different areas related to consumer feelings. For example, instead of sort of flavor mashups, it might be that there's more nostalgic themes or more comfort themes on a menu instead. And as I mentioned, that rise of the sort of delivery model has led to and sort of the adaptation that's had to happen in that industry, in hospitality as a whole, is of course beyond delivery. The next sort of view of that is what we call ghost kitchens. And ghost kitchens are where restaurants are running multiple menus from a commercial kitchen, which is not even in a prime location, where people don't even know the categories of the locations of the restaurant. So you might be getting your Chinese from one place, and you know, you may be getting tacos from what seems like a different brand, but they're coming out of the same kitchen. So that seems to be a huge growth area as restaurants look for more profitable and efficient delivery and operating models. So those are the kind of major changes that we've seen post-pandemic as per our trends report for 2021.
Fascinating. And I know you touched upon this, but we do know that the pandemic is spurring the emergence of new trends. So what are some of the trends that you have identified that could continue beyond this time frame?
Yeah, I think there was, you know, there were some that were already in play, obviously, that have been accelerated, and then some have come from nowhere and just been propelled from like nowhere into the forefront of people's mind. I think, you know, everybody has now mentioned the rise of the immunity claims that are there in food and drink. And of course, we have the data to back that up as well. You know, for example, we saw food and drink interest related to immunity increase by about 35% in the last year, nearly 20% since the beginning of this year. I think that's a well-established and known fact. But what we believe is the future in terms of immunity claims is really the fact that it's not about calling out immunity long-term, but it's about being able to be authentic in that claim and not just slapping it onto your product because you can, and you know, it's a bit of a strength. It's got to be an authentic claim, and beyond even the immunity claim itself, it's got to be something that's more specific in terms of its functional benefit, be it gut health, be it vitamin C, whatever it may be. I think the focus is going to be that, and consumers, of course, are more intelligent and more nuanced in their choices than they ever have been. So we think it's not just about the immunity claim, but it's about what can you genuinely say is your claim, and what is the specific functional benefit beyond immunity that you're really addressing, that in which will also support the immunity claim. So I think that's one area that's really interesting for us. Of course, we know what happened in the first few months of the pandemic as everybody was at home and, you know, bread making and scratch cooking and all these things that have had to happen. But actually, really, what's the longer term play here as home cooking will continue to grow is actually that it's going to be about devices and technologies and foods and drinks that can actually enhance the home cooking experience, because they obviously do want to, as consumers, want to experiment with our ability to sort of cook different items and be more creative. Of course, there was this particular focus area around the breads and these kind of things, but I think there's always going to be that balance now as we set into new routines around certain elements of convenience. And on top of even convenience, there's elements of safety and hygiene. I mean, we saw that, for example, scratch cooking was going all the way back to 2008. That was a trend around the time of the last financial crisis. But this time we think that food safety and hygiene on top of that is going to be of additional importance. One other factor related to that is actually the simplicity and minimalism of cooking as well. You know, take for example, the interest in simple recipes, easy recipes, ones that only have two or three ingredients that can be home cooked. Again, that's a great way to, you know, balance that convenience factor. You don't want to always go out for the delivery option. Then this is what we're seeing there. And we've seen like almost 72% increase in interest in minimal recipes or simple recipes over the last year as well. So I think that's a really interesting space to watch for. And then thirdly, we think that there's been one around packaging waste. Now, that's not necessarily new per se, but you know, given that there's a new circumstance around that. So we're at home all the time, you know, I think consumers have become starkly aware of how much waste we generate, how much waste we're kind of creating in terms of that food and packaging. So it's really going to start impacting our behaviors and our choices as we go forward. And we're definitely going to see a lot more in reusable packaging and completely recyclable packaging, which is going to become more and more common. Even though short term, I mean, in 2020, of course, there'd been a shift away from that. Of course, there's more immediate and pressing concerns, but we do feel that trend will kind of come back in 2021. And just to sort of evidence that, of course, brands like Burger King in the restaurant space have already started testing reusable containers that they're going to be implementing next year. Nestle has been testing refillable dispensers in their coffee and pet food in the home market, Switzerland. So there are definitely initiatives in this area, and they're going to have to continue to rise as we consumers just become acutely aware of the level of waste going on inside their homes, not to mention anywhere else. And then on top of that, I think very connected to that waste management area, of course, this year has definitely been the year perhaps where upcycling has finally penetrated into the mindset of product developers and food and beverage manufacturers. A lot of interest we're seeing in this area from an insights perspective, and it's come out from the fringes and sort of starting to hit the mainstream, and it's only sort of massively accelerating. You know, there's a lot of potential in the byproducts that are created during the manufacture of regular products. And it is not just about an alternative revenue stream, but it's about doing good as well. We've seen, for example, I think sort of just in the last 12 months, nearly a 600% increase in interest in upcycling. So that's been a fascinating one.
Awesome. Well, and for our future food and beverage manufacturers who are listening today, what trends do you suggest they examine to fulfill the next needs state in these consumable markets?
So, I mean, there are so many different directions that are available right now. Of course, you know, given the economic climate, you know, it's often said that this is the best time for innovation, and the next biggest brands are always emerging from these kind of new scenarios that we find ourselves in as a result of the crisis. But, you know, some of the things that we're seeing and sort of reiterating again, two kind of themes that are appearing for us in our data. One is around solutions in waste management. We think that's going to be just a huge thing that's here to stay, as we said, upcycling of food processing byproducts and packaging. We think that's just like what we can see from the data, and when we kind of compare it to what we've seen in the past for established trends that are now mainstream, you know, we're seeing a really strong validation for the upcycling and waste management space. I think that's one area that people should really look at and focus on. I think there's a lot of interest from a consumer angle there. And then the other thing is, of course, health and wellness foods has been around for a long time now. There's no question about that. But actually, you know, we've seen, of course, the rise of very specific and nuanced claims that are happening on products. But we think there's an interesting area that's going to appear around oral health and other claims that haven't really come into the food space yet, related to visual health or eye health, skin health, which have traditionally been, of course, more on the non-food CPG side. We think, you know, those three areas, oral, eye, and skin, are going to see an emergence. You know, areas of collagen, particularly things like vegan collagen, has been sort of making a rise in the data as well. So I think between those factors, those are the key areas that we're looking at and we're seeing rise going into next year.
Wonderful. Well, thank you, Kishan, for sharing your insights on the trends impacting the food and beverage markets.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
And for more about the latest innovations hitting the beverage market, be sure to check back with Beverage Industry Magazine's Sip and Learn podcast.